Welcome to the Op Overwatch podcast, a podcast that explores the struggles, experiences, and even the redemption stories surrounding law enforcement. Now here's the executive director of Op Overwatch, Dave Buds.
As I said, I'm Dave Buds. Steve is Steve Ritchie, and we're part of the leadership of a ministry called Op Overwatch, and that's what we're here today. We're here to talk about the ministry, do an interview with an individual who wrote the book Break Every Chain, and thus a movie, a really good movie, was made off of that book. But just to fill you all in briefly, I'd like to tell you what Op Overwatch is about. It's a trauma resiliency ministry. It's a trauma resiliency ministry of God, and it's built on and toward community and abiding in Christ. So relationships in community with peers and the greatest relationship of all in Christ. And we kind of walk down four paths of strategic approach that the Lord's given us. And that would be benevolence, that would be training, that would be outreach, and that would be edification. And these four paths underneath, these paths sit under one mission, and the mission is that law enforcement would understand that there is an identity in their Creator, in Jesus Christ, that is so far greater than any identity that the badge could ever bring us. And it's been thrilling to be part of this, and the Lord giving us these four paths to walk down has been brilliant on His part, no surprise there, because underneath each of those four paths, the creativity is endless. And as long as they feed the gospel, as long as they bring the truth of the word of God and redemption underneath those paths, then we can be as creative as we want to be in that realm. But I'd like to just let Steve share, and then we'll go to a break, but we'll have him intro himself really quick and just kind of share. Basically, Steve, start with your entrance into the ministry and then kind of what you're doing for the ministry, which is a lot, but go ahead.
Well, my entrance into the ministry started in 2020. Is that at a local church? Both Dave and I were attending, and I had known Dave for about 10 years up to that point or so. I was in a Bible study with him before, but we sort of disconnected for a while, and we saw each other standing there, and as we were both leaving, we sort of interacted.
Well, you make it sound romantic.
Well, the way you it was not romantic at all. Let me correct that one.
We saw each other from across the room.
We made eye contact. and as we were both walking out, you had told me about Op Overwatch and what your mission was for Op Overwatch, and just said if you were interested, you were doing a Bible study on Fridays and actually on Thursdays too. And that I would be invited to come. And at that moment, I was definitely searching for something. I needed something in my life. And it piqued my interest. I got in my truck and drove home, and it just hit me like, this is it. This is it for me. So we sort of connected at that point and started doing the Bubba studies related to Op Overwatch on Fridays and then on our Thursday studies with non-law enforcement. We did those studies also. And then God began to work in His wonderful way, and things began to really roll along. And
and we had kind of had a history prior to that, and you have quite a history prior to that. And I've actually watched him walk through the trauma that he dealt with, and I've seen the ups and downs, and then I've seen the incredible successes of recently. So we're going to start off. I'm just going to let Steve share the critical incident that he went through on the job.
So I was a police officer up in Lockport Police Department up in New York State here. I got hired in 1985. So in 2003, we had an incident which took place outside one of our local bars. We had an individual, I'm not going to identify him by name. I'll just call him Mr. X because he doesn't deserve any other respect. But he had an ex-girlfriend that was the bartender inside the bar. She had a new boyfriend, and also he had a new girlfriend. He had acquired illegally an AK-47, and he intended to, I guess, from what we can gather, he wanted to go out in a a blaze of glory. So he decided to drive to the bar, pulled out outside the bar, called out the boyfriend, who walked out to his vehicle, pointed the gun at the new boyfriend, and when the individual saw the gun, he ran, tried to run back inside the bar, and Mr. X here fired some shots at that individual, struck him in the backside, fell to the ground, crawled back inside the bar. He then proceeded to empty his magazine into the bar, so shooting into the windows. Nobody else was hurt. Everybody ducked. But at that time, actually, I had just responded to a call for a vehicle parked in one of our local convenience stores, and the call came in that there was an individual in the vehicle who had a rifle and a large amount of ammunition, and which most likely was our suspect here. When I had responded to that call, the vehicle was gone. But as I'm sitting in the parking lot, the call came in for the shots fired down by the bar, which is just right around the corner from the police department. So we're right at shift change. Guys that were in the police garage heard the shots going off, and they actually walked outside to hear people screaming. And
so this was, what was the exact date, Steve?
This is February. This evening was February 8th, 2003.
Okay. And I remember the details of the story, and there's a fascinating part so he reaches in. So when our subject shows up to shoot the boyfriend and shoot up the bar, the boyfriend encounters him at the passenger window, and he points the AK-47 at him. He grabs it, right?
He grabbed the gun by the barrel and just sort of pushed it off to the side to give him enough opportunity to get, at least try to get into the bar.
Takes off running. And receives a few rounds where?
Well, in the backside. in the lower backside.
Yeah, the lower backside, yeah, as he's running into the bar and survives. I mean,
I'm not laughing at trying to, but once those shots struck him, our suspect had ammunition that was a variety of different ammunition. He had armor piercing, he had cheap practice rounds, and luckily for this individual, he got hit by the cheap practice rounds that were in the gun. So they struck, went through the fat, never hit a bone, cauterized in there, still has the rounds in his backside today.
Wow.
So he was fortunate in that respect, that he was out of the hospital within a couple hours.
Do you ever hear of him or see him? Or
no, I don't.
Huh. I wonder if he's still in Lockport.
I don't know. Hmm. We had dealings with a brother of his that weren't so pleasant, okay. But not him.
So the chase begins now. You get the call, it's shift change, and now the pursuit or the search for this suspect begins.
Right. He drove away. Now, he drove away, picked up his new girlfriend, switched cars, picked up his new girlfriend.
Switched cars.
And then was driving around throughout the county, stopping in other bars throughout the county, bragging that he had just shot somebody and killed somebody. He thought he killed the individual. He wasn't sure if he had killed anybody inside the bar when he was shooting up, but bragging about the fact that he shot and nobody called. Nobody in the bar called. No employees of the bar called. And he went into several bars. There's a couple that called later in the evening to let us know that he had just left, but not while he was there. So we were always sort of one step behind him in his search. But in the meantime, he was calling the police department, or his new girlfriend that was in the car with him was calling the police department, letting us know that, well, he's on his way now to his parents' house. He's going to kill them. He had foster parents that lived up here. I don't know where his real parents were, but he had foster parents that lived up here. So we had sent a number of cars over to the parents' house. Actually, I sat there for a while on the street, and then he had called and said he's going to kill his parents of his former girlfriend. And so that's where, as we're chasing him around throughout the night, always sort of one step behind, that's where it really starts and it intensifies at that point. Mm-hmm. So we had a car that was responding to that area of his parents' house, and sure enough, he spotted the vehicle. He had now switched back to his original car that he was driving. He dropped his girlfriend off. He had actually parked behind a church and switched the vehicles there. And so she drove down to the police department and was informing us of what his plans were. We had a patrol car that caught up with his vehicle, tried to do a traffic stop, a felony stop, which is when you do a felony stop, you don't actually get out of the vehicle. You wait for other cars to get there before you actually get out and encounter the individual. But he didn't stop. So he kept going. The pursuit ended or continued into a trailer park in Lockport. And if you've ever been in a trailer park, they're pretty much a mess because they have roads that go all over the place and nothing connects here or connects there. It's like a maze.
Our first week living here in Lockport, I remember you basically have to pack a lunch if you're going to go into that trailer park because you're not getting out if you don't know.
Right. I mean, the sheriff's departments have to carry maps in their vehicles to try to figure out to maneuver through these parks.
So now he's in the trailer park and he's clearly, from everything you're hearing, his intent is to kill. He's seeing this as possibly his last night on Earth. And as with almost every active shooter you encounter, their goal is most amount of targets, most amount of kills.
Right. There was a marathon on Discovery Channel that week of the California bank robbery where the guys were wearing body armor and got in a shootout with the police department there. And the police department were actually going into gun stores and taking large rifles in order to have back the firepower. So there was a marathon, and he was watching it. So that was even pumping him up even more. So as he pulled in the trailer park, one of our cars pulled in behind him. And now we had sheriff's department and other cars, state police cars, and some of our cars pulling in also into that trailer park. They all got lost. They couldn't make their way out. So the original patrol car that pulled in behind him stayed behind him and pulled out. He pulled back out onto Transit Road in Lockport, and I was coming from the other direction. And then we had another car with two detectives, Captain Eggert and Lieutenant Seekins, that were in that car. They made it out also. So they were behind the vehicle. I was sort of coming from the other way, and then he pulled into another trailer park. And from that point, when he pulled into that other trailer park, the decision was made, we're going to block this entrance because we're not going to go in. We're not going to get lost also. We're going to just sort of block the exit so he can't come out. And so now we're sitting there waiting, and I'm very critical of myself in many aspects of this because complacency sets in. I'm sitting there in my vehicle, just sitting there waiting. No gun out, not expecting, okay, what could happen? And the next thing you knew, I saw some headlights coming at us, and I saw some flashes start.
And you're in a K-9 SUV, right?
Right. I was a K-9 officer. I had a police dog in the back with me. I had an SUV, a S-10 Blazer. There was another unmarked detective car ahead of me with Detective Seekins and Eggert in it. So
he comes barreling at you.
He comes barreling down. He opens fire first on the detective vehicle. Both detectives bailed out. Captain Eggert got hit in the shoulder. Detective Seekins came around the other side of that vehicle, and now he just was coming straight on at me, shooting all the time, shooting into my window. So I'm sort of laying across the street, across the seat. I'm trying to get my gun out. We had the double retention holsters. You got to push forward and pull up. And when I finally did get my gun out, I did not know this, but I hit the magazine eject button. Mm-hmm. So the magazine ejected onto the floor of the vehicle. I had one round. But when he did start shooting, there was a shot that came through that ricocheted and struck me in the chin, knocked out some teeth and sort of cracked my jaw. So as I'm laying there, he did ram me head on. And he just kept pushing me until he couldn't go any further. And it was a snowy night out that night, so there was a snow pile, I think, behind my vehicle, which sort of ended the push when he couldn't push me any further. So at that point, it sort of got silent. It sort of was like a little bit of a calm, and I thought, okay, now I got to come up with a strategy. I'm a sitting duck in this vehicle, and I got to get out of this situation. I got to get to some cover. So my plan was to get out of the vehicle and just unload my gun into his vehicle as I'm running to some cover. And so I opened my door. As soon as I opened my door, a shot came through, hit me in the chest. My gun went flying. I lost my gun because my right arm became paralyzed. And now I'm like, oh, crap. So the shot went through my chest, out my back, through my lung, along my spine, which caused the paralyzation in my arm. And at this point, I'm like, okay, I got to run to some cover. And I started running. I saw the other police car up there. I saw a snowbank up there. And my mind was just going a mile a minute.
You fell after that shot, too. Didn't you fall right on his head?
Yeah, actually, as I came out of the vehicle, I sort of spun around and fell on top of his car. And actually had to push myself off of his car because, and my gun had went flying over the, you know, off the roof of his car and just sliding off the roof of his vehicle. So, I mean, I was right there too. And at that point, I think he was reloading, which probably saved me even a little bit more, as I was trying to run. So I got, I don't know, maybe another 30 feet and I just couldn't breathe anymore. And I ended up thinking, okay, hit the ground and I'm laying on my back and I just think I gotta play dead here. I don't want to do that levity that I told before, but anyways, from a cartoon where you just play dead and you'll be fine.
Yep.
I wasn't fine. So luckily for me, Scott Seekins, who was on the other side of the car, was engaging the suspect back and forth. So he would fire a couple shots at Scott. He would turn to me, fire a couple shots at me as I was laying on the ground.
So he hit you a couple more times.
He hit me and shot me in both my legs. So he hit me in, I think the shot may have gone through both legs. So it went through one leg and out that leg into another, or possibly it was two shots that struck me. But the one shot that struck my one leg almost blew it off. So I do remember laying there and just remembering my legs popping up in the air and flopping back down. And I'm just looking up at, I remember looking up at a street light that was somewhere and seeing the snow falling, it's snowing out, and just thinking like, God, don't let me die here. Don't let me die. And sort of that was the end of my recollection, because the next time I woke up in a hospital. But the fire fight continued. Our suspect was struck in the leg by a shot by Scott Seekins. Not to get political here, but for people who think that you could shoot somebody in the leg and they're going to give up, it doesn't work. Hmm. It doesn't work. He kept shooting. As a matter of fact, he told the Scott, he said, you're supposed to shoot me in the head. Hmm. And Scott responded, I'm trying.
Jeez.
So he wanted to go out suicide by cop. And so at this point, he actually, the cavalry was coming because the guys found their way out of the trailer park. The lights and sirens were going off. And there was a sheriff's car that pulled in at the entrance. He laid down some spike strips, and he turned and fired some shots at his car. And then at that point, he ran off into the woods, or hobbled off into the woods, and he took his own life. So he put the gun under his chin and pulled the trigger and took his own life.
And it was Seekins who dragged you to...
Yeah. So at that point, when he had run off into the woods, we had Scott had no idea if he was still in the woods alive or what was going on. So Scott ran over to me and was trying to pull me over over a snowbank for cover. And so he was still trying to protect me. And I'm telling you, so I owe a lot to Scott, because without him engaging the suspect, I think both myself and Larry would be dead.
Okay, so there's the critical incident in a nutshell that Steve went through. Came on the job in 1985, you said, right?
Yep.
And that happened in 2003. You get transported to the hospital afterwards, and your chances are made pretty clear in the hospital, right? You want to tell that story?
Yeah. At first, I was transferred to Lockport Hospital to stabilize me, which they did. And then on the way to ECMC, which is a trauma hospital here in the area, which is a great hospital, by the way, I did code a few times in the ambulance when I'm told. And when I got to the hospital, I had my best friend on the department was in the emergency room waiting for me to arrive. And they wheeled me in the room. He said, I'm in the room with you. You're naked on this gurney and nobody's coming in, like for 5 minutes. And because I walked out to the nurse's station, I asked them, like, is somebody going to come in here and help my friend? And the nurse there just said, oh, honey, just go out in the waiting room. We'll be out with you in a few minutes. So he came to the conclusion that I was dead. And that they assumed that because nobody was coming in. And then at that moment, a trauma doctor who they had called in came into the room, and they had some interns in the room. And from what I hear, the doctor said, okay, let's go. We're going to go prep for surgery. And the interns are like, well, wait a minute. He's dead. Why are we doing this? And he's like, he's not dead. We're going to go into surgery. Either you want to come with me or you don't have to come with me. So I went into surgery. They invited my family in to say goodbye if they want it, because they didn't think I might probably wouldn't make it through the surgery. But I made it through. God had some other plans.
So how long from the taking of the four rounds? I don't think I've ever asked you this question. From the four rounds that you took, you fall on the ground. How long are you laying there in like 10 degree, 18 degree February weather? How long are you laying there from that point to the hospital? Do you have any idea the time stamp?
I would probably have to say maybe like a half hour.
Okay. So all told, laying on the ground in the cold and then getting to the hospital, 30 minutes
well,
go by.
To get to the hospital?
Yeah, all that together.
ECMC or just Lockport Hospital?
When they started working on you.
They started working on me at Lockport. So that was probably maybe 45 minutes, probably.
So for 45 minutes, your body, the Lord is keeping you.
Yes.
It's incredible. He's keeping you through
that.
There
were people that were on the scene that were like screaming into my face, trying to get me to respond. And they said, you're doing the dead man gurgle.
Yeah.
And the dead man gurgle is when somebody dies, the oxygen releases from their lungs because they're not breathing in it. And they sort of make a gurgling sound. So they said, you couldn't get a pulse on you. We couldn't hear your heart. We couldn't hear anything. And then all of a sudden they said, you opened your eyes and you sort of woke up.
Well, and it's shock that kills most people when they're going through critical incident like that. So your body's already, you know, you're already up against the wall because you're laying there in 18 degree weather. So your blood temperature, it's not pumping, you're dropping.
Which might have been actually a benefit being in the cold.
Huh.
To actually help slow the process down.
Yeah.
As far as the, you know, what was going on internally. So who knows?
So God uses these doctors to save you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go into surgery and come out of surgery. So I spent maybe 5 days in a coma, drug-induced coma, and they started bringing me out of it. And I just remember waking up in the hospital room, hearing the beeping sound of a heart monitor going off, and hearing somebody moving around and asking, because I had no recollection at this point, like, what happened? And they said, I said to somebody that was in the room, where am I? And they said, you're in the hospital.
Huh.
Why am I in the hospital? You were shot. Crazy, first thing that came to thought, Scott Seekins and I were really good friends. We went to elementary school together. And I said, why did Scott shoot me? What did I do? We were best friends. And it's all I could think of, because I knew he was there, but I just couldn't put the rest of the puzzle together. And actually didn't for a while, until I started having nightmares. But as I was in the hospital, there was a pastor that came into the families, and he read some scripture to the family. Can I read that
yep.
right now? I think it's important to the story here. So this is Mark 4:35. Jesus calms the storm. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, let's us go across the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? And he read that to the family just to let them know that, you know, Jesus is there. He's there to calm whatever storm you may face. Hmm. And your faith is what will get you through in any type of storm. So we'll get back to a little bit how that is significant. But as I'm in the hospital, the doctors are coming in and saying, okay, look, your right arm's paralyzed. It's not coming back. You're not going to be able to run on your leg again. We had to reattach it. We were going to take it, but we reattached. We had this the new procedure that we just developed, and we tried it out on you. And we think it's going to work. So, but you will be able to walk, but you're not going to be able to. And
sounds like the $6 million man.
Everything but bionic.
Yeah.
But
darn it.
I know. So as they told me that, so what do you want to do when you get out of the hospital? And I'm like, well, I'm going to go back to work. Oh, they got light duty? I'm like, no. And then it was just that look they would give me, like, okay. And they would walk out of the room. And then the psychologist came, like 5 minutes later, psychologist come running in. So how are you feeling? Okay. So what do you want to do? what do you mean, what do I want to do? What do you want to do when you're out of the hospital? Well, go back to work. And they're writing the little notes down. So are you depressed about anything? No. I'm alive. I'm happy. I'm alive. God saved me. I'm alive. And they were sort of stunned by that type of attitude that I was having. But knowing that my arm was paralyzed and they're like, it's not going to come back. God and I had a little bit of a conversation and I said, God, I said, Jesus, I want to go back to work. That's what I want. But if you want that, then I will go back to work. If you heal me, I will go back to work. But if you don't heal me, just let me know what you want me to do. I understand that you saved me. You saved me for a purpose. I just want to know what that is.
So it's interesting because you do, obviously you go back to work. You even run and you can do everything with your arm.
My arm came back, miraculously came back, like to a surprise to everybody. I think it was 2 years later, ran a 5K race.
Yep.
So it was, it took me 2 years. I got back to work.
So prove them all wrong. 2 years later, you're back to work. You then work 10 more years on the job, right?
Yep. 10. Oh, actually 11. Because I actually retired in 2014.
Interesting. So this is, in this moment, I mean, everything, it's just typical work of the Lord, right? And I'm going to jump ahead because I know your major question after this, because it's all happy at first. God saved you. But then the trauma starts to settle in, the impact on the brain and the manifestation of those memories start to settle in. In addition to a question I've heard so many times in the ministry, why, God, did you spare my life? Why am I still here? And that can become a burden that you carry. And you asked that question for 17 years, right?
I asked it for 17 years because even though there was sort of that cloud nine feeling that I was saved, that God saved me, my life sort of became a mess. And when I got out of the hospital, I mean, my marriage was falling apart. I wanted to save my marriage, but things weren't working out, and arguing and fighting. And now I began to suffer from nightmares. Those started maybe 6 months after I got out of the hospital.
What are those like? Are those vivid?
Those are vivid retelling of the story.
Okay.
And each one would start off with our suspect telling me, you got it wrong the first time. Let's see if you get it right this time. He was there at the beginning, and he would tell me, you got it wrong. Every one of them started that way.
Really?
Every one of them. And it was just like, and it went through the whole story, and nothing changed. Nothing changed at all. So those are pretty, and I would just wake up screaming from that stuff, because it was just like, and I would go through the whole dream, whole nightmare. And at the end, when I got shot, that's when I would wake up screaming. There was not, like, I couldn't wake myself up. And it got to a point where at one point I knew it was a nightmare. I knew it was a dream, mm-hmm. but I couldn't wake myself up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like I had to go through it. And so that went on for quite a few years. It continued. So
anger.
Yeah. So that was the other thing. So I found myself in a lot of situations with my kids being short-tempered, like over the top. Like they would do something wrong and I just lose it and start yelling at them to the look where I just look at their face, and they had this look of terror on their face, like, Dad, we're sorry, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would have to catch myself, and I would be like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, you know. I would realize it. Never got anything physical or anything, just losing my temper, just over the top losing my temper, crying about things, and became very, very depressed.
So were there smells or weather conditions or things that you would see that would also take you, while you're not sleeping, take you back to that moment?
There were things that, for me, obviously loud noises. So I couldn't watch movies that had loud noises in them, even being startled by loud noises behind me, being in a crowded room. It just, that's just something that, you know, you just feel vulnerable at that situation. For me though, driving, like when it's at work driving and seeing headlights coming at me, and sometimes being dazzling, whether they're high beams or, dancing lights. It would take me back. Snowy nights, like that night.
The weather conditions.
Like driving, and it would just, I'd be driving and it start snowing just like that night. And the roads would be sort of snow covered. The plows weren't out yet. And I just like, okay, it would take me right back there again.
See, this stuff, this is what, for the listeners in Op Overwatch, we've dove deeply into PTS. Next, I'm pastor of the Center Church, and next to just absolutely loving the scriptures and deeply digging in the scriptures, it's digging into PTS and trying to understand and learn as much as I can about the physiology behind that condition. And the reason I say PTS is we leave in Op Overwatch, we leave disorder off of it, because it's not a disorder. I understand the medical industry. I worked healthcare fraud for 15 years. They have to diagnose. They've got to put a diagnosis on everything because then they can medicate, they can bill, they can treat all that. But we don't have to. It's post-traumatic stress is what it is. It's not post-traumatic stress disorder. Combat vets who are heroes overseas and then come back, you don't have a disorder because you have stress from what you went through. Steve here, everything his body would do to manifest the physiological reactions to what he went through, it's not a disorder. It's post-traumatic stress. And it's amazing when individuals begin to realize that it isn't a disorder, because the problem with it being labeled as a disorder is you try to run from and escape a disorder. But that's not the plan with post-traumatic stress. You can't escape and medicate. You can't run from it. It's knowing that it's actually, and this is the statement that really impacts, it is a normal reaction to an abnormal event. So everything Steve just took us through, the nightmares, the crying, the anger, the depression on days when the weather wasn't right, the escalated reactions on the anniversary every year, February 8th every year, those are normal responses. And it's actually fascinating when you begin to understand how the brain deals with this stuff.
Right. Actually, it's February 9th is the day of the shooting. So that's
9th.
The 8th is when everything started. The 9th is when things transpired there. And again, being at that point where like these things are happening in my life, and I'm saying, God, you didn't save me for this. Like praying every night, God, this is not what you saved me for. I can't take it. And I got to a point in my life, and I'm going to say something because you and one other person are only people that, or actually two other people, are the only ones I've ever told this to and know this story. But I got to a point where I'm like, I can't do this anymore. My life is falling apart. I can't deal with it anymore. I went to my gun safe. I took out my gun and I put it in my mouth and I was going to pull the trigger. And at that moment, God spoke to me and said, if you think your suffering and your trauma is going to end when you pull that trigger, you're wrong. You will have an eternity of suffering and trauma that you will deal with.
Wow.
And you will not be in paradise with me. Wow. And I took the gun out of my mouth. I put it back in my my gun safe. And, you know, I've never thought about that thought again, because at that moment, just God told me, like, you're not doing this. I didn't save you for that purpose, for you to interfere in something that I have planned for you. And
wow.
So I never told any of the doctors that I went to that story. I've never told anybody because I was sort of embarrassed by it. There's sort of a, when you do something like that, there's sort of a label that you're worried about people are going to put on you. You worry about what people are going to think about you. But an understanding, hearing other people's trauma and what they've gone through, particularly that have thought about that, knowing that, you know what, it's something that we, you know, people can deal with and do deal with it and come out of it, you know, on top without actually committing suicide. But it was also that revelation that, like, it's not, your trauma is not going to end. You're not going to be in paradise with God. You are going to suffer an eternity.
So on that, I mean, it's so powerful for you to share this, because as you just walked us all through everything you're dealing with as a result of the survival of this critical incident, plus due to lack of time, we can't even get into the other traumatic moments that you went through for the next 10 years on the job, the failed marriages, the personal and professional trauma that just kept accumulating and accumulating in Steve and anyone without Christ, which at this point, Steve is not, at that point in the story, he's not regenerated. He's not a new creation in Christ. You would ask, you would say, Lord, who are you that you would put me through this? And now I'm just going to suffer. I'm going to continue to have nightmares and anger, and I'm not going to be normal, and I have this disorder, finger quotes, and I'm going to suffer through this. So I have become a detriment to society. I become a detriment to my family. I become a detriment to the department. So my last heroic move is I'm going to remove myself from this earth. But God, he intervenes at that moment, and this begins Steve's redemption story from this point forward. What was the year approximately when that
was like 2005. So oh. I wasn't even back to work yet at wow. that moment. So my trauma continued, my suffering continued. It didn't go away.
Like right.
And there was, I am grateful though. Let me tell you something. I am grateful for at this point in my life for all that stuff that I went through, because it made me, it put me where I am today. It made me the person I am today. I didn't like dealing with it. It sucked, but it just made me a much better person today, a much better, stronger Christian today. I love Jesus with all my heart. He's done so much for me, and I don't hold anything against him.
So we got 2 minutes till a break. Now, I want to interject a bit because I want to talk about this Steve Ritchie that I met in like 2010. And Op Overwatch wasn't even a thought. I mean, nothing that the Lord's doing right now was even a whisper in our ear. I'm leading a Bible study, and in comes this guy, Steve Ritchie.
Good-looking guy.
No, not really. And just kidding. Well, the 80s mustache was gone.
Yes.
That was impressive,
yes.
That 80s mustache. And that was gone, along with a lot of hair, too.
Yeah.
So Steve comes in, and he's just this tired, worn-down guy who's seeking the Lord. And you study probably, what was it? You study like three to 5 years with us.
It was 3 years.
And then the mornings just became too much because of no sleep at night. And because we do 6 a.m. Bible study, so Steve ends up leaving the study. Here's where, just so God. So Steve and I are both attending the chapel at this point, but I hardly ever see him because we go to different services and it's a very large church. But fast forward to 2020, Op Overwatch has now been in existence, loosely affiliated for about a year and a half. And it was about 2020 when we found out that we were going to be given an 18,000 square foot building to us. So here we are. It's 2020, and I had I'd been working King's World with my wife Melanie, and there had been two occasions from like November of 2019 to February of 2020, two or three occasions where I saw Steve. And I wanted, everything in me wanted to invite him to this new Op Overwatch law enforcement Bible study that we were doing on Fridays. And then to re-invite him also to the Thursday studies. But for some reason, it was the weirdest thing. I couldn't do it. I couldn't move my feet to go speak to him because I kept hearing in my mind, he's not ready. He's not ready. Remember when he walked away? And that was my perspective. He's not ready. Well, then, strange, in February 2020, same scenario. I'm sitting there, and I'm actually sitting in a little coffee shop in between services because we were serving in King's World. And there's Steve, and he's sitting at a table full of people. And I had that same impression on my heart to go invite him. Tell him about Op Overwatch. Tell him what's going on. Maybe it'll be different this time. But this time, I had nothing in my ear saying, don't do it. Instead, I had this powerful, powerful voice in my ear saying, you have to go talk to him now. So I got up, I walked over, and I talked to Steve. And I mean, I don't really remember the details of the conversation, but much to my shock, Steve was very excited about, like, immediately. I mean, your response was,
yes.
Right. Yes. It was like,
wow, that sounds great.
And I don't remember this enthusiastic guy from before. And he's all about it. He's like, yes, I'm in. I want to do it. Well, I come to find out, like, 6-7 months later, that day was February 9th, 2020. It was the 17th anniversary of the night of the shooting. And the Lord just works in these beautiful little ways, because Steve then shares with me that the Lord has given him a new anniversary instead of 17 years of fear and dread for February 9th. It's now joy and new life and new creation, because he then steps into this life in Op Overwatch, which, just to share, excuse me, one more thing with you all, fast forward to the end of June 2020, and Steve and I had been getting closer and closer and closer, hanging out a lot outside of Bible study and everything, and we were given this 18,000 square foot building by Rapids Bible Church, where our headquarters is located in Rapids, which is Lockport, New York, and we're given the building, and the Lord makes it very clear, Steve's to run the building. This will be Steve's building. He's to run it, and Steve's going to be a big part of trauma and everything that we do. And Steve didn't know that, but the Lord shared it with me, so I invited Steve to the parking lot across from the building, which was Rapids Fire Hall, just to meet me there. He had no idea what was going on, and one of the greatest moments in my life to ever experience the work of the Lord was when I pulled in next to Steve. He had no idea what's going on.
No, I'm sitting in the parking lot facing the building, the church building, yeah. Just sitting there. And I wonder what he wants. Having no clue. No clue at all.
So I remember I get out, and I tried to make it this big moment, but I think I just blurted it out. I said, see that across the street? And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, that's our building. That's given to Op Overwatch. And the Lord has told me very clearly that you're the one that's going to run that building. You're going to know that building like the back of your hand. And Steve, law enforcement's going to come through that building day after day, and they are going to hear about Jesus. And God is going to use your story to change lives. And I remember as Steve basically with his right arm grabs onto his mirror and his knees buckle, and he says to me, finally, finally I know why you saved me, Lord.
Absolutely.
What a moment.
I'm getting emotional now about it.
So we just got a couple minutes left, but I want to share with you what Steve has hanging in our barn structure, which is Op Overwatch Corral, and it kind of ties up this story with a bow. We bought Steve a gift, a little plaque that had Genesis 50:20 on it, what you planned for evil, God used for good. As Steve, I love his statement about evil lost in this. But in addition, he hung his light bar in the corral, which has a rifle rounds in it, but he hung something else too. So go ahead.
So I guess the light bar represented the evil part. Mm-hmm. But with me on that night and before, prior to that, I carried a policeman's pocket Bible in my vehicle. It was in a slot above the radio in the police truck. So when he ran me head on, it flew off of its spot that I keep it, opened up and got hung up on the police radio cord. And what it was opened up to was Mark 4:35, what I just read at the start of the show here.
The passage that the pastor read.
Absolutely.
To your family.
Yes, it was hung up. It was open on that. So the police department had it framed, put in a frame. I just wanted it back, but they framed it up for me. And that's what hangs there, because now that represents the good that God had in mind to me.
Man.
And I just thought that would be good for other people to see too, to know that, you know, that's not a coincidence. There's no way that's a coincidence. That's God sending a message to let us know that.
And that's for everybody. That brings this full circle. For 17 years, Steve, like the disciples, came to Jesus and said, where are you? Are you sleeping? And he's in control the entire time in his sovereign timing. He will work. And you know, this trauma stuff we talk about, it's not just for law enforcement. Everyone out there listening, you've all been through trauma, and you deal with it in various ways. And our sovereign, powerful God is there. And if you allow him to, he will take this trauma and he will work it for his good and he will save souls through that trauma. And Steve's story, I mean, we really, every time we talk, Steve, it seems like we don't have enough time. We're just scratching the surface of what the Lord has done in Steve and the good that lies ahead.
There was a lot of bad that we didn't talk about, that a lot more trauma that I dealt with on the job. Just don't have the time to talk about that, but yeah, it's something that made me and brought me to where I am today, and I'm happy and thankful for what Jesus has done to in my life. Also going, I can't not mention her. Mention Teresa, because of my,
who's she?
She's my future wife.
Woo!
Yeah, that's right. So, and that's something that God also provided, for me, in attending the Center Church. She was attending there also, and it's brought us together, praying at God's time, like, bring me somebody that you want me to be with and that we can share in our Christian faith. And she is a wonderful woman. I love you if you're listening.
You, me or Teresa?
No, not you.
Oh, okay.
You're right.
I
here.
Wasn't sure who you were saying
Teresa,
that to.
Okay. I love you.
All right. Because I was listening too. So we'll close this up and go to a break and then bring on Jonathan Hickory. But this is. All of you out there that are funding Op Overwatch or praying for us, Steve is one story out of hundreds that we're experiencing. The Lord is bringing these men and women in, and he's transforming their hearts, and I praise God for that.
Thanks for listening to the Op Overwatch podcast. For more information about the ministry of Op Overwatch, please visit opoverwatch.org. We hope you enjoyed this new episode, and if you did, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please share this episode with others who might be interested in this topic. Also, feel free to let us know what topics you'd like to see covered in future episodes. Just get in touch on any of the Op Overwatch social media pages.